hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a hard time. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run it down my country, man, you're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this, this program here on whiteresistanceradio.com or altrighttv.com. You can reach us through either channel. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, and Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots more news and views, and let's go to a little bit of information here about a guy named Bill Gates. You know, he's the founder of what is he, the founder of Microsoft, of course, and he is not a medical doctor. In fact, I don't believe he even graduated from university, but he holds himself forth as an expert on all sorts of things, including he's really pushing viruses. And you know, would it surprise you to learn that he will make a lot of money from it? Here Bill Gates is saying he expects $200 billion from his $10 billion invested in vaccines. This is, you know, really shocking. It's actually a 20-to-1 return. One of the commentators on Twitter says, "So this monster with $152 billion in wealth wants to go to make it $350 billion and calls himself a philanthropist."
And you figured out the return on investment for that. It kind of stunned me. Can you walk us through the math?
Over a 20-to-1 return. So if you just looked at the economic benefits, that's a pretty strong number compared to anything else.
I think the numbers that you ran through were if you had put that money into an S&P 500 and reinvested the dividends, you'd come up with something like $17 billion, but you think it's $200 billion.
Here, yeah.
Think about that. I don't have a problem with anybody making.
Have you figured out the return on investment for that? It kind of stunned me. Can you walk us through the math?
Over a 20-to-1 return. So if you just looked at the economic benefits, that's a pretty strong number compared to anything else.
I think the numbers that you ran through were if you had put that money into an S&P 500 and reinvested the dividends, you'd come up with something like $17 billion, but you think it's $200 billion.
Here, yeah.
Just stunning, is it not? Well, the excesses...
And you figured out the return on investment for that. It kind of stunned me. Can you walk us through the math?
Over it.
The excesses and the outrages of... the new political police in Canada, just absolutely mind blowing. The things that are done to people for the infractions, real or otherwise, of the increasingly absurd rules that we're supposed to follow, distancing and all that. This is something that has to be pushed back on, and there'll be protests again this weekend in many places across Canada. If you live in Kelowna, British Columbia, or anywhere in the Okanagan Valley, there will be a protest in Stewart Park, which is opposite the Kelowna City Hall, at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning, from 11 to 1. If you live in Toronto, there will be a protest for the, I think that makes it the fourth Saturday in a row at Queen's Park, which is the legislative buildings in the center of the city. It will be at Queen's Park from noon until 3. If you live in Vancouver, it will be on Sunday afternoon, and it will be... in Burnaby, which is a suburb of Vancouver, and it's outside the offices of Adrian Dix, D-I-X. I believe he's the health minister in the socialist government there. There it's called No More Lockdowns, Freedom of Choice. There are a couple of entertainers. One of the key organizers is my good friend, the videographer Brian Roos. So that in Vancouver, it'll be this Sunday at May 17th between 1 and 4 outside the offices of Cabinet Minister Adrian Dix, and his office is at 5022 Joyce Street. So there's lots of pushback, and more power to all of you who are standing up and pushing back. Here is from the Rebel Media. Before I do that, here was a rally in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And this is not being the first one. I want to thank Bill down there in Pennsylvania for sending this my way. And... it's got an interesting headline. Is there any content? Oh my gosh. Anyway, these things happen. Further about the outrages here in Canada, here's a report from Rebel Media by Ezra Levant. It says, Mark Silvestre was alone in a virtually deserted Ottawa public park where he often goes for his hobby, metal detecting. He was hoping to find some discarded metal or coins, but instead he was given a whopping $880 fine by two members of the pandemic police. And this is a report by Rebel Media's reporter Robert Menzies. But why did they have to give Silvestre such a whopping fine? Surely the role of bylaw and law enforcement during this global pandemic is to educate, warn, and disperse those who are breaking bylaws. It's supposed to be corrective, not punitive. Don't forget, many people are suffering grievously financially during this hysteria and economic shutdown. People have lost their jobs. People are have lost or are losing their businesses. To slap an $880 fine on a person. Now, what was he doing? Well, he was alone, all by himself, in a park, looking for metal. And Ezra Levant makes a very good point. Surely the role of bylaw enforcement during times like this is simply to keep people on track. So if you see people clustered together, nicely move over and say, "Now, come on, guys. You're supposed to keep 6 feet apart unless you're, members of the same household or family." As they say in England, jollying along, people along. About 20 years ago, I knew a former British policeman. It was in Canada. And he had been a London bobby in the days that they didn't carry any weapons except a billy, or a small nightstick. Only on special occasions would police, like the flying squad, be issued with firearms. So how did the bobby, which is the nickname for an English policeman, a London policeman, how did they go about enforcing the law? Well, most of the time, they tried to foresee problems and gently jolly people along. That is, kind of encourage them to, do the right thing. Oh, come on, you're not supposed to do that. Rather than come in like gangbusters, slap the handcuffs on, slam them onto the pavement, give them a couple of boots for good measure. And that was why the British police were widely respected, in a way that sometimes police in other parts of the world are not. Now, particularly in the case of a pandemic, this isn't like having to enforce the law against somebody who's an armed robber, or somebody who is caught trying to rape a woman, or something like that. We're talking about acts that are nowhere near violence. Do they have to go in like gangbusters? Well, apparently they do. Anyway, to continue with Ezra Levant's commentary, he wonders, surely the fining provision should be the last resort, or are certain municipalities looking upon this global pandemic as a means for a cash grab and a power trip? Well, I think the question almost answers itself. Mark Sylvester is a laid-off mover. Like millions of people, he's another victim of the economy crippling Wuhan virus. But this abusive fine was adding insult to injury. Yeah, don't forget, he's not unemployed because he's a bum. He's unemployed by government policy that's preventing him from working. And this is a little more detailed report from Rebel Media about Mark Sylvester fined $880 for looking for metal and coins in an Ottawa park. Oh yeah, he was alone. So you wonder, well, what regulation or rule or law was he even breaking? Ooh, don't ask too many questions. We really are sinking fast into ugly tyranny. This is from Rebel Media. Fined for no reason.
So in other words, the most dangerous potential event for a transmission of this virus came when the bylaw officer got into your grill to give you this ticket.
Exactly, and that's the lunacy of this whole situation. That's where it just becomes... Social distancing became moot at this point. To me, it was just... I don't know if it's a display of power. I don't know if it was just meeting a quota. I have no idea, but this is just ridiculous, and anybody can probably agree.
David Menzies for Rebel News here in Ottawa, Ontario. Well, folks, I'm at Strathcona Park, and I'm with Mark Sylvester. Now, Mr. Sylvester was in this park last month. He was walking around by himself, minding his own business, pursuing his hobby of metal detection, Mark has a little metal detector, and he was looking for some buried treasure. Can you possibly guess what happened? Yep, let's cut to the chase. Ottawa bylaw descended upon Mark and presented him with one of those $880 coronavirus tickets. Yes, Mark is our latest person to come forward to fight the fines, and just will you hear his story. What exactly happened that day when you were here looking for buried treasure in Strathcona Park?
Well, it was very simple. Basically, walking around this field, you know, figuring, you know, metal detecting, what could be more of a social distancing hobby, right? So I figured, you know, it's cool, I'm not near the benches, I'm not near other people, I'm in the middle of the field, you know, what could go wrong? And lo and behold, from half a kilometer away, here they come, and I knew right away. So what could I do? I just stood there and expected the worst, and the worst happened.
And when you say they, this was bylaw officers, plural, from City of Ottawa?
Yeah, two of them came up to me with smirks on their faces, actually, and I basically said, oh no, you're not going to give me a big ticket, are you? And they're like, yep. And next thing you know, after a small protest, I gave them my ID, and obviously I had to accept the fine. What else could I do, right?
Now, you know, Mark, I'm very curious. You said a couple of officers came up to you. You alleged they were smirking. They were happy to give you this ticket. When we look across Canada at various municipalities, the last I checked in Winnipeg, they hadn't issued a single fine for this to anyone. If they had simply said, sir, you can't be here, will you leave? Would you have complied without an argument?
Well, of course, yeah, that's what I was totally expecting to happen. That's actually the first question I asked him. It's like, do you have to ticket me? Like, is this? And he's like, the time for warnings is over. You know, a lot of people are being filled with paranoia and anxiety because the rules are evolving, they're changing, and you can seemingly, this emergency order is giving bylaws, people with normally, you know, very limited powers to, you know, ticket, you know, parking and everything, and now, if basically they don't like your face, they can say emergency order. And
well, Mark, I can tell you, our lawyer, Sam Goldstein, says even under the Emergency Act, it doesn't give any authority or any branch of law enforcement the right to eclipse your charter rights. You mentioned there were a couple of bylaw officers. I don't know if you saw if they were in the same vehicle or if they were walking in close proximity to one another, because we've had, you know, with other Fight the Fines people that we've gone to bat for, they've made that pronouncement that the people, i.e. bylaw or law enforcement handing out the tickets, were they themselves violating social distancing laws. Did you observe that too?
You know, well, that's another point you just reminded me of. At one point, when he was writing me the ticket, he was probably about as close to me, just a little bit back from this microphone, so he definitely wasn't social distancing for me. And I kind of made that point. I'm like, you're a little close to me there, buddy.
So in other words, the most dangerous potential event for a transmission of this virus came when the bylaw officer got into your grill to give you this ticket.
Exactly, and that's the lunacy of this whole situation. That's where it just becomes, social distancing became moot at this point. To me, it was just, I don't know if it's a display of power. I don't know if it was just meeting a quota. I have no idea, but this is just ridiculous, and anybody can probably agree.
Mark, I think what happened to you, and I would bet that the vast majority of our viewers would feel that what happened to you back in April was egregious. I know you're out of work right now through no fault of your own. $880 is nothing to sniff at. If you want to fight it, certainly thousands of dollars in legal fees, you know, that it almost defeats the purpose. But what I'm going to do for you, my friend, is I'm going to make an offer to get you represented by Sam Goldstein. He is our ace criminal lawyer back in Toronto. He wants to get justice for you, and it's not going to cost you a penny. We are going to crowdfund this through our fightthefines.com website. What do you think of that offer, my friend?
Oh, I am so much obliged. That's the greatest thing. Like, I cannot thank you guys enough. And like you said, you know, it's not about the money here. It's about letting people know you can't be doing stuff like this. This is not Animal Farm here. This is not 1984. We cannot just tear rights away from people whenever it's convenient.
We're going to crowdfund the thousands of dollars in legal fees, and we're going to, when things get back to normal, when the courts open up, we are going to fight for justice in terms of your case here.
Thank you so much, guys. That means the world. Like, just to know I'm not alone in this, not to simmer at home and say, what can I do, you know? At least I know there's people pulling for me somewhere. It's beautiful.
Well, I'm with our lawyer extraordinaire. That would be Sam Goldstein. He is representing the cases in Ontario in our Fight the Fine series. And Sam, you know the case of Mark Sylvester. You've talked to Mark. What are you going to do for Mark once this case gets to court?
Well, David, once again, I think it's important to point out that there are these laws, these emergency laws now, and they do prohibit people from being in parks and in publicly owned lands for more than incidental periods. So I don't encourage anyone to go out and do the same things that Mark did, because there are these laws. Now, whether we agree with them or disagree with them, or whether they can be challenged finally at court is another story, but people are risking being ticketed. So I think that's important to say. I'm certainly concerned about these laws and their effect on our civil liberties, and that's why I think it's worthwhile to pursue what Rebel News is doing. What we normally consider activities in society, going to visit our mothers on Mother's Day, are not covered by the Charter. It makes us really think that the solutions to things are not necessarily legal solutions, but rather we have to ensure that our leaders themselves have some sort of democratic integrity to them, that they won't pass laws of this nature. And ultimately, I think the solution is at the ballot, that we vote people out who create laws that may be legally sound, but just, on the other hand, morally repugnant.
Hey folks, have you been victimized by bylaw or law enforcement?
And I think the lawyer makes a very good point. I am less and less impressed with the usefulness of our Canadian legal system, because the judges are appointed, and they're appointed very often by cultural Marxist politicians. And despite all that they might say, they're not necessarily appointed only on merit. You know, the point being that while we may look to the courts for some things, real change in society has to come about through political change, through pressuring the politicians, perhaps even defying the politicians. The lawyer makes the point that this emergency bylaw has been duly enacted, or probably duly enacted, by the local government. And while it might possibly be challenged, despite the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that talks about the rights of Canadians, for mobility, these rights are being violated right, left, and center. The courts may be a venue, but a wholesale revolt against politicians and letting them know that they will be replaced at the next election. You know, it's political pressure that is ultimately our solution. And you see, that's not always what certain types of people want to hear. There is a type of person that is always looking for the magic bullet. And the problem with the magic bullet is that there very often isn't one. Some years ago, there was a group that developed in Western Canada and spread across Canada called DTACs. Now, it came in several forms, several different names, but essentially, to make a very complicated story short, they argued that the income tax law was illegal, and that through various cute legal tricks, you could avoid paying tax. As I say, it is complicated. But a number of people, I attended a couple of their meetings, and a number of the people in attendance I'd never seen before, which doesn't mean, you know, they weren't perfectly legitimate. But the impression I got, and people who are more involved in the detox movement than I ever was, confirmed this. Many of these people were people who didn't like paying taxes. Well, which of us actually does? But rather than fight for lower taxation through the political process, they bought into some very dicey or legal arguments that all they had to do was say a couple of things or do a couple of things, and the government couldn't tax them. I'll give you one example, and it's only one, and I do it for illustration purposes. I was told by several people that all you had to do was to set up two joint bank accounts. So I set up a joint bank account with you. You're not even a relative of mine. You're my next door neighbor. So you're John Smith, and I'm Peter Jones. So we set up a John Smith, Peter Jones joint bank account. Two of them, actually. And I co-sign all the checks in your account, and you co-sign all the checks in my account. And whenever I want to draw on my account, it's our account, but it's sort of our account bracket mine, and you've got our account bracket you. Well, I talked to lawyer Doug Christie, and this would be back in the early 90s, and he said, yeah, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. The government can get into a joint account just because it's jointly, you know, yours and mine, doesn't mean that the government can't get at it. And they can. And so the idea that we'll put our money in two joint accounts and the government can't get it, this was just one part of the detax argument. It just didn't hold any weight. But the point I really want to make here is that for some people, including some of the people that I met at one of these detax meetings, this silver bullet was going to be a magic solution. They didn't like paying taxes, and they were being convinced that if they just took a couple of relatively simple steps, they could avoid it because the Income Tax Act was illegal, or so they said. Now, this is another thing that when you run into people like this, that you have to ask. I don't necessarily suggest that everybody that has a brilliant quick fix is wrong. But what I ask in a case like this is, well, can you get, has a judge ever agreed? You know, you say it's illegal, and you might be right, but it only counts if you can get a judge to agree. If no judge will agree to this, then, while theoretically you might be right, your being right has no practical implication. I'll give you another example. This is from the United States. Another detax argument was something like this. The state of Ohio, when it joined the Union, I believe in 1836, so they say, the state leaders did not properly sign the document by which the state joined. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. Anyway, but the way the argument went was, well, because Ohio didn't properly join the Union, no law passed after 1836 is legal. I have no idea whether that's true. I mean, the premises. But my question was, yeah, but has a judge ever agreed with that? You see, what a judge would have to agree that every law passed in the United States since 1836, and that's like nearly 200 years, is illegal. Well, that means almost everything. Every law, every entitlement, is illegal. Is any judge going to say, yep, that's right? Or if a judge does say it, is any appeals court going to say, yeah, you got us there? Basically shut the whole country down. And will the Supreme Court say, yeah, God, by gosh, almost everything is illegal? Well, they're not. As a matter of practicality, it isn't going to happen. And clever as the argument might be, it has no application in the real world. Some people tend to want to look for a silver bullet. The real answer to tyranny, and we are living in, especially in Canada, in almost a psycho-tyranny, is to fight back politically and resist. For instance, the tyrant mayor of the city of Toronto, John Tory, has come up with a brilliant idea that he will designate about 50 kilometers, which would be about 30 miles of city roads, as basically pedestrian and bicycle lanes. Cars will be banned, at least for this weekend. And including some key routes. Now, this is supposedly to allow people to get out and use their bicycles. These guys are big on bicycles. Not that they get around the city that way themselves, but they're big on the peasants getting around on bicycles or walking. Well, not only is this an egregious misuse of power, I would say if you're interested in people getting around walking, open the darn parks that you've closed. There's a fear that that this, far from being just an emergency measure for one or two weekends in during the Wuhan flu hysteria, may become the new the part of the new normal, because many of the city fathers desperately want to get rid of the automobile. I mean, that is except for their automobiles, of course. This is a fanaticism that we face. The only answer to that is wholesale resistance and throwing the tyrants out at the next election. But that involves work. And, you know, I have heard people say, well, I don't want to do that. I mean, I've got to go and vote? Yeah. You're suggesting I help a candidate, maybe even give some money? A pro-freedom candidate? Yeah, I'm saying that. Oh, well, I've got a football game to watch. Well, you don't now. Well, professional sports have been canceled, but you get the picture. There's no substitute for commitment. I had a strange meeting today. I've met an unusual new recruit. I won't give you too much more information because that's not really the point. You want to get together and share some information with me. And, I'm quite content to meet in my car. But for some reason, though, he wanted to meet. He had a place outdoors. And it was at the back of a very large school. There's a couple of, picnic tables under some trees. Well, normally, that would be nice, except it was raining. But that's another story. But as we looked across this large school playground, we noticed swings and jungle gym, I guess, for the kids to play with. And they're all surrounded by yellow tape, you know, like crime scene. Only it's not a crime scene. Well, yeah, it is a crime. It's a crime of stealing taxpayer-paid equipment from us, from use. And there's a story going around that there was a woman in Toronto who was in this on a swing that had been surrounded with this yellow tape, and it would be in a different municipality. And she was actually arrested by the police the other day for being on a swing. What gives these politicians the right to deny us the use of our property? And this is what people have to say, to see quite clearly and to push back. You know, as grim little Greta says, how dare you? Yeah, well, how dare they deny us our property? And you know, the sad thing is, if you're prepared to put up with tyranny, hey, there's always somebody around ready to be a tyrant. And he will have different excuses. He may be an egomaniac and simply say, well, I am the brightest, I'm the best, you've got to do what I say. Or, more like Tyrant John Tory in the city of Toronto and others, they're doing it for our own good. And every now and again, they get right angry with people. Well, you know, we gave people a chance, but too many people were abusing it by walking too close together or gathering in larger numbers, and so we have to shut these facilities down. Yeah, just the way you would punish a bad kid. Except you wouldn't. You wouldn't punish all the children in your family because of something one child did. I don't think you would. I certainly wouldn't. Because one of the things parents have to model is justice. You've got to be fair. And you know, we all know, especially with kids, they have a fairly finely tuned sense of injustice and hypocrisy. And they can quickly detect if you're saying one thing but doing another. Well, this is Paul Fromm. I'm going to play a commentary by the leader of the People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier. And the person who sent it to me, Sharon's sister upstairs at Yahoo Nation, says, man, I wish this guy was in charge. He would never have been so irresponsible as to have destroyed our economy. And Maxime Bernier, the leader of the People's Party of Canada, says, it's time to end the lockdown, reopen the economy, and protect vulnerable people. You know, all of these things can be done. It's not a matter of the choice of one thing.
Hi, everybody. I want to talk to you today about the lockdown. Like I said before, it is time to end the lockdown and open the economy, but protect vulnerable people. When we started the lockdown a couple of weeks ago, the goal at that time was to flatten the curve. We wanted to be sure that our hospitals would be able to deal with the situation. And now they changed the goal. We must still be locked down to prevent the propagation of the virus. Why can people go to the grocery store while respecting social distancing, but the economy cannot be open? For me, every business is essential. Essential for the owner, and essential for the employees. Ending the lockdown is the only solution if we want to prevent deaths from the coronavirus and deaths due to prolonged lockdown. We know that there is people out there who are waiting for important surgeries and cancer treatments. The lockdown is destroying our freedom and our prosperity. We at the People's Party of Canada will always defend our freedom. See you another time. Stay strong and free.
That's the leader of the People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier. And common sense, and that's something that's in very, very short supply in this pandemic hysteria, the Wuhan flu hysteria. It's possible, you know, the figure that even our chief medical officer of health, that China woman, Theresa Tam, mentioned the other night, is that 82% of the deaths in Canada have been in extended care homes. So that's old folks, almost always with pre-existing medical conditions. Usually severe ones. In some cases, they're bedridden, have to be fed, have to be cleaned up when they go to the bathroom. Many have had strokes, heart attacks, diabetes, and so on. So they're in very perilous physical health to begin with. Along comes coronavirus, which attacks the lungs and it puts them over the edge. But flu in other years has done that too. Other types of flu. So that's 82%. Then there are old people who have died, but not in old folks' homes. They may have died at home. So of the remaining less than 18%, most of those are either themselves old folks, already with pre-existing medical conditions, serious medical conditions, or somewhat younger people with pre-existing medical conditions, gross obesity, serious diabetes, heart conditions, and so on. The point being, we are shutting down society, shutting down the economy, throwing people out of their jobs, ruining businesses to protect probably under 1,000 people. Well, what about a different approach? The approach that they've taken in Taiwan. Why not build a ring of steel or whatever around old folks' homes? Do whatever is necessary. You may have to rebuild them on an emergency basis so that you space people out. There's one person to a bedroom, not two or three or four. Do whatever is necessary. And we may talk about these measures on another occasion. So that would protect the overwhelming number of people who are most vulnerable. Then strongly urge people who have serious medical conditions, especially respiratory ones, to self-isolate. Now, they may have to take particular care of themselves. And then let the rest of society go back to functioning as normal. It's not a matter of throwing anybody to the wolves, but it's also not a matter of shutting the whole society down. In some ways, it reminds me of the left liberals' approach to gun control. Somebody shot somebody. Well, we're going to get all those people who legitimately own guns. We're going to take their guns away or take some of the guns away. It strikes me a little bit like somebody speeds in a car and runs, an old person over, or runs a kid over at a pedestrian walk, crosswalk. Okay, we're going to show you, we're going to ban all the cars. Well, fortunately, it hasn't gone that far yet. That's the condition with the coronavirus. Anyway, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me, and let's play a few tunes by another guy who's a real fighter, an opinionated guy, the son of the late great Hank Williams, a man who died far too soon. This is his son, Hank Jr. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
Country folks can survive.
things these old boys can't do. I broke good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and the country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those bunch of old boys raised on shotgun. We say bridges and we say man, if you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and this taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. And shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. 'Cause you can't stop us out and you can't make a run. A bunch of old boys raised on shotgun. We say great and we say man, and you ain't in the bad, but don't get us down. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can.
Few tunes by Hank Williams Jr. and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com or AltRightTV.com. Back with you again tomorrow, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, would that our first hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada. live forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. Of love be